Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
You know, Don, I was driving along the road the other day and I was at an intersection and I see this big group of people protesting on the corner there. And I'm looking, and I think, oh, I wonder what they're protesting. You know, coming from a pro-life activism background. Sure. And then I see the word babies and I start to get really excited thinking they're pro-life. And then I see the P word for male genitalia. And it is a group of men protesting circumcision.
Really?
I am not even kidding. There's a group
I was
of
just
about
gonna
20.
Say, no kidding.
I am not kidding, Don. And there were all these signs. I'll have to tweet out some of them. All I can think, I was telling a friend of mine, he's like, I'm with Paul. Problems for the Gentiles. We worked through these already.
Yeah, right. This is one of the first things we covered as Christians.
I mean, but I know a lot of people do have their children circumcised for sanitary
sure.
reasons. And of course, the Jewish people, if they so choose, and they'd like to have their children circumcised, you know, freedom of religion in that element.
So this is a sign of oppression, is it? Is that what the men are saying?
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, some abuse toward little babies and, you know, something that shouldn't be done. And it wasn't even so much an abuse of little babies, but it was all older men out there, too, which I thought was interesting. And I start to think, what do these people look like? And I have a friend in the car and I said, well, what do they look like? And as I look at them, most of them are dressed in all white. And then all of a sudden I notice that their crotches are stained red.
Oh
like
my.
Bloody.
Oh my.
And I am just sitting here going, okay, that's
where were they, where was there a particular business that they
was,
were protesting?
No, they were just on this corner.
Interesting.
On a street corner, a busy, you know, intersection. And it was funny because these people were staring in the cars because I started to think, are we the only ones dying here?
Yeah.
And this guy's looking with his jaw dropped, trying to fumble and grab his phone in the car next to
Yeah,
us.
Right. Well, all right. I don't know what to say, but now, you know, I haven't heard that much. I've heard of objections to circumcision,
right.
Usually not very loudly. I've never ever heard of anybody taking the time to go and protest on a street corner for that one.
I have not either. And it's funny because my friend in the car with me is a nurse practitioner. And I said, you know, I've always heard from people I know who have researched it and said that it's more sanitary to be circumcised.
Yeah.
And I asked her, you know, from a medical professional perspective, you know, she works a lot in the ER and said, you know what, the only cases where I see besides sexually transmitted diseases, issues with infection in that area are with men who aren't circumcised. And so I just thought it was interesting, you know, kind of another caveat to it.
Well, a little bit more serious protest happened this week and continues to happen, actually.
Right.
And I want to get your take on this first. What do you think about the whole Me Too thing in the wake of Harvey Weinstein's sexual predatory practices? Alyssa Milano started this, a former child actor. I used to watch her on Who's the Boss, I remember, as a kid. And she tweeted out, it was actually a friend of hers, apparently, who asked, hey, if everyone who had been sexually abused or molested or any of that tweeted out Me Too, the problem might gain a bigger audience, if you will, come to light a little clearer. So she did. And 200,000 almost immediately within the first 24 hours, I think, had used that hashtag Me Too, including many people on my social media feed. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, I'm watching, people have jumped from Facebook to Twitter to Instagram. And I think that I have mixed feelings about it. On one sense, I think it's created an incredible amount of awareness for people who, and especially a lot of people who just never realized that many people were sexually abused. On another, you know, in another area, I think that it's also, I've read articles where people are devastated saying, I am just being hit in the face with, you know, a two-word update from friends and family members who are just putting up Me Too or suddenly sharing these stories. And, you know, it's shocking. But also, I think that sometimes I wonder what level of sexual what people define as sexual abuse. You know, hey, someone kissed me and, you know, I felt uncomfortable. You know, I think that there's so much, I think there, this is such a sensitive topic that for so many people to be kind of just slapping up as an Instagram or Facebook or Twitter status, me too, I think that for those people who have also been sexually abused, I'm seeing a lot of them coming out of the woodwork saying, this is actually kind of really tough for me to see. It's not something, I saw one woman talk about how it's not something that I share about, you know, it's private. And, you know, it's something that she herself, she said, I struggled with this and I've journeyed with it. And it's not something that's easy to just see people throwing up and, you know, kind of just throwing up there is not even that serious at the same time as being serious.
Yeah, maybe that's the issue. Is it a serious thing, or are you being flippant about it?
Yes, flippant.
Yeah, for me, I think in my experience that it has been a positive movement that I've seen, because mm-hmm. having awareness of the sheer numbers, the right. sheer numbers of women. My first reaction was to be angry at some of the people on my timeline who dismissed, in a way, some of the other women who I thought very bravely had put up stories that I had never heard, and they were very clear about their stories. And some of the other women came out with this, hey, you know, very angry, sort of put them all into a box and said, just treated it basically as another political movement. And I thought, how dare you treat these women as if they're all just part of some sort of what you're calling an ultra-feminist movement.
Right.
When there clearly is a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of abuse that has happened. I think, I mean, I've seen it in very, very close in my family, close friends. Just this morning, a friend of mine, I mean, I'll call her a friend. She was very clear about it on Facebook, so I think I'm on safe ground talking about it. So she was a young lady when I first met her, probably 3-4 years old. I knew her family very well and watched her grow up a little bit, and then we moved apart. And so I've sort of been watching her life on Facebook from a distance, you know, for the past several years. But you could tell, you know, she was the sweetest little girl. Like I said, she was probably 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 when I really spent the most amount of time with her.
Right.
And then you could tell her teenage years, she really struggled. Like there was something going on there. And then as an adult, you know, made some decisions. I thought, well, okay, you know, that's interesting. And today she came out and just explained, I was abused as a 6-year-old. I was raped as a 20-something-year-old by a boyfriend, right? Like all of this stuff. And she's like, I finally came out about it to my parents when I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that was healing. But and it was just, to me, I thought, well, this is healing for her.
Right.
It also helps me to really be less judgmental, right? Not that I was overly judgmental. I just thought, well, she's making some interesting life choices. But you know what? As she explained it, she tried to commit suicide as a teenager after her sexual abuse. And I just think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, let's have some empathy. And I think if she had seen some of these other women, and hopefully she didn't, but I assume she probably did, who are on my timeline, lumping her into, well, you're just another crazy feminist. Right?
That has nothing to do about being a crazy feminist.
It has nothing to do
These are women's stories. And I think that that's what's, I think this is the tough part, is the median that they are being communicated in. People have such a lack of respect for it. You know, people are willing to say anything. And that's why for me, I see for those people who have been sexually assaulted and they're struggling seeing this, you know, I think people are being somewhat flippant about it. And it has nothing to do with being some feminist. It has to do with, we're not just speaking of women who have been harmed. I've seen a tremendous number of people, both male and female, coming out and saying something. And I've seen a tremendous number of men, men outspokenly living gay lifestyles, who have said, I have been sexually abused. And grant, they're not necessarily connecting, hey, this is part of why I struggle today with my sexuality, but they're being allowed to say, I was sexually abused. Even Terry Crews was talking about how this is actually a problem. He was at a party not too long ago, and he's walking in with his wife, and another guy at the party just reaches down and grabs him on the crotch. And Terry Crews' wife is standing right there. How disrespectful to do something like that in front of a woman let alone do that to another person.
Just do that, yeah. Right? Yeah.
And Terry Crews tweets out how he basically, he was ready to pummel him, but he thought, what will this look like? A, you know, 240-something pound black man beating up this guy and then storming out. So he does nothing.
Right.
How? And that just shows, here's a big guy who could defend himself and is completely justified. Think of all the people who are not saying a thing and they are being sexually, physically assaulted.
Well, in that same story, and this is something I want to talk about here maybe later in the show as we explore different aspects of this, he actually thought, well, maybe this guy doesn't actually see this as, it's just a way to sort of say hello almost. Like, it is so flippant and so accepted in the culture. And this is one of the things that I think this Me Too campaign hopefully is bringing to light, that this is pervasive in the culture. And as much as I understand that we make distinctions between a wink or a pinch, yes, of course we make distinctions. Of course, they are not all in the same moral plane. But on the other hand, we do live in a culture that clearly objectifies women. We objectify each other, but I think women especially are objectified. And as men, I just think we do that a lot more than we're willing to admit.
I've got to push back here. I think we need to talk more so about how women and children are especially objectified, because I think there are a lot of men out there who are struggling with having been sexually abused when they were younger, and they are expected to just be silent.
All right, we'll have more on this when we come back. You're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timory.
This is Trending with Dawn and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DawnJohnsonMinistries.org or Timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Dawn and Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Talking a little bit about the Me Too campaign, and I know this has raised a lot of hackles. People are emotional about this,
right,
for good or for ill. I mean, on one hand, I think it's drawing awareness to obviously a very, very important topic. I hope that it is bringing healing to many people out there who realize that, hey, I'm not alone in this. I don't need to be silent about this. I don't need to be afraid. I can be vocal about what has happened to me. On the other hand, as you alluded to, Timory, maybe some people do just want to forget about it. Like, we want to move past. I don't want to think about what happened to me all those years ago anymore. I don't want to have it thrown up on my Facebook page all day long, especially by people who have not been abused to the degree that I was, right? Or
right,
like that sort of thing. And then there's some sort of, I mean, I feel that too. I like, yes,
yeah,
we don't want that either. So it is a tough one. I think we need to be very careful to treat each individual story on an individual basis. I mean, that would be, yeah, a good starting point for me.
I think that's a really great example, because I remember a number of years ago, there was a talk given, a testimonial, and someone was speaking out about suffering. And it was a decently small environment, and everyone kind of knew each other. And the woman up there who was speaking, giving her testimony on suffering, her suffering had to do with just feeling like she was suffering or having worry. And she was very young, and I'm sure that her suffering that she experienced was very serious to her. But you had people, I had a person on my right and my left, and she was trying to relate it to physical suffering. And the person on my right had struggled with cancer for a number of years, and he was about 25. The person on my left had struggled with other medical issues, and I myself have struggled with medical issues. And it was hard. And I wasn't even thinking about myself in the moment. I'm sitting here thinking, this person right here has suffered tremendously, and here you are saying what you are as if you're someone who suffered a lot. And it was easy for all of us to kind of be a little bit judgmental, but I can imagine people who have gone through such tremendous sexual abuse are saying, first of all, this is somewhat, and I know I hate the word triggering, but it is triggering for them. And not only that, but again, it's such a flippant attitude people are having. And again, I see a lot of people brushing off the men and the children who have been abused. And it's like, this is a really big issue that a lot of men, especially gay men, have struggled with and have been silenced about for so long.
Yeah. Well, and if we could just maybe then not be flippant about any of it, right?
Right.
Like if we can just accept that you personally, I want to help you heal. I want to stop doing what I'm doing if it's causing offense or harm to others. All of those things, like yeah. Let's take it on a case-by-case basis and not just dismiss it, regardless mm-hmm. of whether or not the thing that you went through is the same that this other person went through.
Well, and it makes me think, too, of the issue of abortion. And I know a lot of very often we share a lot of about women who are post-abortive and how they share their testimonies. And I feel bad sometimes because I think about, man, there are so many women who are silent, who don't want to share and don't need to share their stories if they don't want to. And I think that's another thing. If you do not want to share with anyone right now that you have been sexually abused, if you don't want to share your story, if you don't even want to put up Me Too, you don't have to give in to some social pressure because everyone else is doing it. That's your story and your journey that you're going through. And I think that's something very important. And it's the same with women who have experienced an abortion. Some are called to speak out and share their testimony and that be part of not only their healing journey, but their effort to make a change in the culture. Same thing with this topic. I think both of these topics are as violating as they can possibly be.
So on the other side of that, let's do speak to the people who have been fairly flippant or dismissive. I've seen several of them for various reasons. So, for instance, one guy I saw had commented on a post, and he put up a picture of Alyssa Milano in a very revealing outfit, basically saying, you know, if she didn't want the sexual abuse, she shouldn't be wearing this outfit. Can I be angry about that for a second, or do you sort of get what he's saying?
I think that there's a middle ground. I think that that's cruel for him to say that. I think there's one thing to put a picture up of Melissa Milano and say she's asking for it. I think it's another thing to speak in theory, hey, we're living in a culture that allows for this because of how sometimes we're living our lives, that we're telling other people, I don't care if you sleep with me, because we're saying you can sleep with me even if you're not my husband, even if you're not my boyfriend. And when we allow for that and we add any type of narcotic, any type of alcohol, you are opening the door for non-consensual sex and even semi-consensual sex a lot of the time when we're under the influence.
This is an excellent point. So, and it illustrates just what we were saying in the first segment. So in the case of Alyssa Milano, when she says, hey, I was abused, it is, I think, immoral and rude to respond to that by putting up a picture of her in a revealing outfit.
Right.
On the other hand, it is certainly true that as a culture, this is just what you were saying, Timmer, as a culture, both men and women, we have been objectifying each other openly, happily for the past several decades. As you know, and I know this comes up a lot, but I didn't make the news this week. This is the news. But as you know, I've been doing a documentary about the history of the sexual revolution. So one of the pioneers of the sexual revolution is Helen Gurley Brown, who was the person who turned Cosmo from a literary magazine into basically a porn magazine.
Right.
And she was the one whose claim to fame originally, how she got noticed, was her book, Sex and the Single Girl. And her point in that was that women should be objectified. She's very clear about this. She explicitly says, I want to be a sex object. That is what I am. I want to be a sex object for men, and I give you instructions in my book about how to be the best sex object you can be. So pretty yourself up and unbutton a couple of buttons and do all of this stuff. And this is her quotes. I want to be a sex object. Okay, if you have bought into that notion as a society of women, should we be surprised? And again, this is not to excuse men. I'm just saying that should we be surprised then that as a culture, we have, in fact, a whole society, it seems like, of somewhat predatory men who are saying, oh, yeah, you are a sex object.
Right.
And that's how we end up with thousands upon thousands of women who say, yeah, I've been objectified. Mm-hmm. I've been abused. Yeah, you have. There is a cultural-wide issue, though, going on.
Well, and we open the door for abuse when we take the consequences away on an issue. And that's where we've seen an increase in abortion, contraception, and an increase in sexual assault, especially as we see that the consequences of an unplanned pregnancy, the consequences of finding out that someone's spouse is now pregnant, those things are being taken away with abortion and contraception. It's one big cover up and lie. And when we continue to justify this lifestyle, it's not a surprise. You know, Don, my heart is so heavy talking about this topic, because I'll never forget the difference between being pro-life, organizing pro-life groups, lobbying on pro-life issues, but then praying in sidewalk counseling in front of an abortion clinic and hearing people's stories.
Yeah.
And then working in a crisis pregnancy center and seeing these women and their stories. And I have to tell you, the vast majority of the time, a woman in a crisis pregnancy, it is not the abortion that is the issue or the baby. It is the lifestyle that has brought her to this point. And a lot of the time it has been sexual abuse, emotional, psychological abuse from family members, broken homes, a spouse or a boyfriend. And this is where it just upsets me, because we're living in this lifestyle that justifies it.
Yeah. You know, Leah Labresco Sargent, a friend of mine, a very good thinker, has an interesting article in First Things this month about how vulgarity normalizes predators. Mm-hmm. And she makes the point that predatory practices don't just happen out of thin air. That we live and breathe in a culture where, even in our words, in our actions, in our attitudes, we are somewhat predatory on each other. We're using people as objects, and we're treating sex as something that can be vulgarized, if you will. And she talks about even the games we play, and she mentions one. In fact, it's called Cards Against Humanity. And there's several of these, quote, adult type games.
Isn't that an adult version of Apples to Apples?
I believe that's what it is. I was not familiar with it. But in this game, you basically match phrases up. So if that's what Apples to Apples is, crazy phrases, and then somebody else is going to have a card with things like, excuse the phrase, but my vagina, or this kind of thing. And then you will finish off a sentence. But it's all very crude. It's
humor.
All very vulgar. And she makes, I think, an excellent, excellent point about this, that when your culture is vulgar like that, on a game-playing basis.
Right.
She talks about training somebody for work. She was teaching them how to use the texting mechanism at their job. So it was her and another woman. And she talks about the emojis that the woman sent to her.
Right.
And the emoji was a vegetable that is commonly accepted as a substitute for male genitalia.
Right.
Followed by raindrops. And again, I'm sorry to be coarse, but this was the initial text that the woman sent to Leah as a test of their, like, she didn't know that this was my first day on the job. She sent a vulgar text using emojis to symbolize ejaculation. And you think, what kind of culture are we living in where that is accepted?
And I like how even Leah knows what it is, but she says something like, and I don't want anyone to have a visual, but she mentions the vegetable and goes, oh, it's a vegetable crying.
Yeah.
And then the girl even goes so far as to kind of comment like, well, don't you know what that is? And Leah has to brush it off. But, you know, it's interesting because I think about this, and even my dad not too long ago, I remember us talking about, you know, when the internet became very available, and, you know, as people are emailing more and more, and you know how people send those email chains or group emails, which my dad said, you know, he had family members who were sending him things that they thought were hilarious, and he had to ask them to stop sending him things. And it's one of those moments where, you know, people actually feel judged, and it creates a barrier between you and them. And, you know, kudos to all the men who are willing to step aside and say, hey, no, leave me out of it.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. This is Trending with Don and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
So we covered a few different aspects of the Me Too hashtag that's been going around in relation to the Harvey Weinstein terrible abuse mm-hmm. that he has inflicted on many women over the years. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about the role that vulgarity, and in particular, I think, vulgar comedy, like dirty jokes, the role that dirty jokes even play in our culture that normalizes predatory practices. And I think, you know, I believe it was Jimmy Kimmel, and I saw a video of him just recently when he was a young comic, and I'm not sure what the show was, but the bit was that he put something in his pants and walked out on the street. And the thing was, he would go up to young women and ask them to feel his crotch and decide, what, could you tell me what I put in my pants? Like, this was the joke. This was the comedy bit. And everybody's laughing and all the young ladies are, you know, whatever. You get the idea. But you look at that, I'm like, is that funny? In and of itself, that's sexual harassment, right. I would say. But the fact that we're laughing about it, and I don't know how mainstream a comic he was at the time. He obviously had a crew, and it must have been some sort of mainstream show. On what level is that paving the way for more serious predatory practices?
Right.
And again, this is not to excuse. Of course we're not. We're trying to explain it. We're trying to give the women, I think, a voice here saying the air that we live and breathe is not healthy. Like, we need to look at some of the root of this, and it's right. not good.
And, you know, I think that just being practical and just saying, hey, that's not okay. You know, I had even in the work environment recently, I had something happen and it wasn't in any way out of control. But I saw that if it was a behavior that was continued to be allowed, that it could cause a problem down the way, because it was pushing a barrier that if that person maybe thought anything further, it would be an issue. And so after, you know, something happening twice, I finally said, hey, that could be considered sexual harassment. And it's so funny because this person was like convicted because they were aggravated. Of course, when we're even myself, when I'm corrected, you know, you get aggravated. You want to justify it. But it's funny because I could tell it was something that this person was having to sit there and think about. And they thought that I was being a little ridiculous, like, geez, sexual harassment. Are you serious? But it was clear to me when I said it that this person wouldn't have gone further past it. But other people would have.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? Like, even if that person doesn't go farther, it sort of opens that way.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think that having, you know, whether it's a dirty email chain or a joke that's being made, you know, I know a lot of people like to make jokes about abortion. And I've been there, and people have even been like, oh, sorry about this one, Tim Rain, they'll make it. And I am aghast. I said, no, you're not sorry. That's not okay. The fact that you have to say sorry, or even there's a hesitation, you know, people won't say things when I personally am around because they know better. But
which
I've even
great.
Said,
that's what you want.
You know what? There have been a couple times where someone had the decency not to say it. And I've gone, what were you going to say? Why aren't you saying it around me? Do you think you should say it at all?
Yeah, I love that, because I think we should all be the people who other people are uncomfortable telling dirty jokes around.
Yes.
I used to think about this with my dad, for example. Like, as the local pastor guy, you know, he was like, and he wasn't even officially a pastor in our community, but everybody knew that he was that pastor type guy,
right.
you know, in our farming community. And when he would enter, I knew this even as a small boy, when he would enter into a place of business or another person's home, their attitudes would change a little bit. Their actions would change because, all right, we're going to zip it up. We're not going to tell. I'm like,
right.
That's excellent. That's right. Exactly what we want. We want you to feel a little bit uncomfortable in telling that dirty joke around me, because let's just say, for example, that he just laughed that off. Oh, yeah. You know, whatever. Tell me. Or if he told one himself, like, oh, we want to fit
right.
in. Hey, we want to fit in and we don't want to be accepted in the community. I'll tell you one. I'm not that stick in the mud. How much of a deadening of conscience that
right.
would have in that community. And if Timmery, if you decide, you know, I'm just going to tell dirty jokes because I want, how less they would have to think about it then.
Exactly.
And this is one of the things I like about this Me Too campaign, is that, you know what? I think it tells people, at least on some level, at least it tells people, I'm not going to put up with this. If you
right.
do that to me, I'm going to shame you on Facebook or whatever. And I'm whatever. Maybe we shouldn't do
yeah.
that. But on the other hand, the voice needs to go out. And before we leave this topic, I want to make sure I say this. I say it often in other topics, but when someone comes with a story, and we alluded to this, but I just want to make it very clear because I think this does a lot of damage. When someone comes with a story where they have been victimized, whether or not you think that it's a serious thing or not, you should not switch topics to something else.
Yes.
Okay, so if you come with a story of whatever, sexual abuse, your response should not be, oh yeah, but what about? Okay, oh yeah, yes. But this person did this, or I did this, or whatever. Or just be there for the person. That's an individual. They've obviously felt hurt. Mm-hmm. Just be there for them too. I mean, I feel like this happens so much, especially in social media. Right. But somebody has, legitimate or not, they've got an issue. A lot of the times they are legitimate. And by switching topics, I know I often use the cancer one, I think because people can get this. If I come to you and say, you know what, my mom's struggling with cancer right now, which she is. And you say, yeah, but a lot of people have struggled with a lot worse. Right? Just please keep that story in mind when you're tempted to dismiss something that somebody has said.
And you know what? I think that this is a great application for anything, whether it's I'm on contraception, I've been sexually assaulted, I'm pregnant and scared, I'm a stay-at-home mom and I'm feeling lonely,
right.
You know, I have a mental illness, whatever it might be. You know, as people, we struggle with insecurity, vulnerability, and we struggle with, you know, and I say that vulnerability because we don't like being vulnerable or people being vulnerable back to us unless it's on social media because we can dismiss it.
Yeah.
But, you know, for you, if you struggle in those moments, I understand that. And, you know, I've had to learn, and maybe this is something you can just study, how to listen. You know, and when someone's sharing something with you, you don't have to have all the answers. In fact, you actually don't have to speak. Let them talk and allow for a silence. And maybe if they're done talking, you know, say, I'm really sorry that you were hurt that way.
Yeah.
Or maybe if you know that they need to keep going, ask a question. So you're saying this. Can you tell me more?
Yeah, it's a good point. I was listening to the radio on the way into the studio just probably an hour ago. And I heard a guy call in and he was upset because of all the men that had been, you know, accused of this. And he says, we're not all like that. You know, there's a lot of great men. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. No doubt. But we're not talking about you, right?
Yes.
Right? Okay, you're a great husband.
Yeah.
Good, awesome, keep that up. But by you phoning up, being all angry now, because you're a good husband, you are taking away from the pain and suffering of some woman who actually was abused. And so, yeah you're right. Just be silent. I think, Timory, that's an excellent one. Just listen. It's okay, you know?
And
just click like.
And something. You know what? The reason we talk about trending topics on trending is because maybe you know someone who is a bit of a sexual predator.
I bet we all do, frankly.
And I think we all do. Maybe you bring up this topic to them. Hey, Weinstein, can you believe this? You know, mention it. Convict them. Not that you're accusing them, but mention the topic and point out that something's wrong without even necessarily saying, hey, what you're doing, you know, and I think that there's a time and a place, but this is an opportunity to convict someone's heart right now.
Yeah, may it be so. We got a lot of other things to talk about, and we got to zoom along here, Timory. So let's go.
Well, speaking of kind of similar topic, just throwing it out there, OkCupid, if you're on OkCupid and dating, or maybe you know someone who is, they have a close partnership with Planned Parenthood now. You can go on, and if you say that you are not in favor of defunding Planned Parenthood, your profile gets a little badge that you can go and donate to Planned Parenthood. But what signs is this in itself showing? You can sexually abuse me in a sense, or you can sexually use me, and we will delete the consequence. We will kill that baby's life, acting as if it's no big deal.
This really is one of the clearer pictures of what abortion ultimately is all about. I mean, you start to, like you were talking about earlier in the show, Timory, you start to talk to the women that are in the abortion clinic. And I don't know if it was this article or if I was just reading another one. I was reading a lot this morning about a woman who was in the abortion clinic, and she had a couple of kids, but she wasn't sure that she could handle this one. And the Planned Parenthood person was actually talking to her a little bit about, well, do you feel this is you? Like, what percentage of, well, no, it's not really me. It's my boyfriend. He doesn't want another kid. He doesn't have kids. Well, actually, he's got two other kids, and he doesn't really want this one. And I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I don't know that he'll stick around much longer and all this stuff. And in the end, and this is from Planned Parenthood. This is a person who actually works. She says, in the end, you know, what's the percentage of you making this decision, and what's the percentage of the boyfriend making it? Well, it's 1% me. It's 99% him. And here's what happened. Just go along with it. Just get it done so I can not think about it anymore. And of course, we know what happens then. And does she know that it's a baby? Of course. She talks about it. Her phrase is the baby. Just get rid of the baby. They know it's... And again, we want to be very careful because a lot of women have gone through this. But it has always been just that extra level of contraception. It has never really been about... any of the smoke screen stuff.
And I can tell you, I have been in front of that abortion clinic, sidebot counseling. I've talked to women. I've been in the crisis pregnancy center. And I can maybe think of one woman who ever actually wanted the abortion. And even then, she didn't want the abortion. It was, this is okay, I can do it. Not that he wants it, but I am. Every other circumstance, these women never wanted to have an abortion. There was some sort of pressure, fear, anxiety that was present. And yes, while they may be choosing it at times, they didn't have the surrounding environment to support them in having that baby sometimes.
It certainly doesn't feel like a choice. That's the thing. It feels like a life and death situation where I don't want to kill the baby, but it's me or the baby. And they feel pressure from all sorts of different areas, from the boyfriend, from whoever, from the job. Yes, that's right. You talk about this being a key to women's freedom. That's how it was sold, right? We need women. They don't feel free at all, generally. You're right, hardly ever.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
One of the topics that we have been covering quite often has been the topic of surrogacy. And not too long ago, just a couple months ago, I think it was the beginning of the summer, maybe late spring, we mentioned a woman who had been a surrogate. She was, I think, about 37, or might have even been a little bit older. I actually think she might be 47 years old, Melissa Cook. And she made national news earlier this year because she was pregnant with 3 unborn children. And this man from a different state had only wanted 2 children. And he was insisting that she abort the 3rd child. She was pro-life. She refused to abort the 3rd child. In the meantime, from what she learned of the man, she had determined that she tried to file different lawsuits and so forth to protect these children, to essentially have a check to see if he was suitable to have these children. In the end, he ended up taking all 3 children. This man has very serious issues. Even the man's sister has actually been speaking out about the harm and damage that's being done to these young babies now. And it is just an absolutely devastating story. Catholic Vote has actually gotten in contact and has been working with Melissa Cook over this last year. And the Supreme Court was possibly going to cover this case, but since they only take up a small number, they did not. In the meantime, other suits have been filed. There is a federal lawsuit that is now headed to the 9th Circuit Court of Appeals. And there's another federal lawsuit in California at the same time because they knew that the Supreme Court might not take the topic up. But in the meantime, Dom, what's so hard, and I just wanted to cover this before we change topics here, is that we're talking about young children whose lives are being determined to go to a specific person before they're even conceived. They're being denied the right to their actual mother and father in many cases. And we're actually preying not only on those children that then go to those families, which are actually in horrible physical care right now, not even having their diapers changed, rashes, they're underground, basically in this basement. But we're also essentially creating this generation of poverty in some sense and feeding into it with this poor woman who's also being abused. by being a surrogate.
It's a devastating story, like you said, on so many levels. I encourage you to go to thefederalist.com and read it for yourself. Two groups of people have zero rights, it seems, in this case, the mother and the babies.
Right.
The surrogate mother has no rights. The babies have no rights. The man, who it seems does not actually want the kids, except in a legal sense, 18-month-old now, triplets, are living in squalor, essentially, without any family connections at all. Can you imagine? I mean,
this is a breeding class of marginalized women now. And I read in this article, someone said it's just a breeder class. But we're breeding a class of these women who are being marginalized. I've been in a coffee shop. I shared this a while back, where this woman who couldn't even speak English was being pressured by some hospital saleswoman on behalf of surrogacy, and they're having some interpreter trying to interpret to this woman. And I'm just sitting here. I remember just trying to play cards with my little sister at a coffee shop and going, this is happening right here, right now. And I don't even know her language to speak to her.
That's it. I think that's a great phrase. A breeder class of women and a class of children without actual mothers and fathers that are existing out there. And we've talked about some of that. That's right. That's no small thing. You think you grow up as a surrogate child and that doesn't affect you? Devastating stories about young kids,
right,
who, when they get to 20, realize, where's my dad signed off,
right,
and agreed to never, ever see me again, have no contact. You think that doesn't have a part to play in how you grew up?
And the vast majority of these babies are aborted, because I only wanted one child and three embryos made it through.
Yeah.
Three babies made it through. But in the meantime, on a different note.
Yeah, we got to find a better story to end with.
And I think that this story makes me look at how we can change our culture based on the way we look at the world around us, and especially our downtime in life.
Yeah, the Angelus News, Catholic Diocese of L.A., I think, writes this.
Yes.
The Joseph Pieper Challenge, they say.
This is actually a friend of mine. She was one of my roommates in college. And, you know, I actually have the book for anyone on Facebook Live. I'm holding it up right now. Definitely a book that I would recommend. And it's Leisure, the Basis of Culture. Joseph Pieper, it's one of my favorite books. I keep it close by. But Casey ends up sharing how her and her husband, they're a young couple, you know, finish 50 hours of work weeks, get home. And she says, you know, we end up throwing Netflix on, finish another episode, rewatching The Office again.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, end the day with half-breathed prayers as we flop into bed.
This struck a little too close to home for me, Timory. This is a fantastic story. Please go to angelusnews.com and read this.
I'll tweet it out for you.
But yeah, absolutely. People live such hectic lives, and you want to do something together with your spouse at the end of the day. I really treasure our time at the end of the day, but you know, you're right. We've got that 40 minutes or whatever before we go to bed, and it's probably we should be going to bed now, but let's spend 40 minutes together. We'll throw on something on Netflix. But is that actual leisure is the question she asked, and I think it's a brilliant answer from Joseph Pieper.
Well, and Joseph Pieper in this book, I have to tell you, this whole book is underlined over and over again, and we have to start with changing our definition of how do we view ourselves? And I think today a lot of people find their value in their work or in their productivity. And basically how much I can get done, how many status updates I can put up, how many things off my checklist I accomplish. You know, we begin to identify with the work that we do rather than who we are. And I think that that's a huge part of changing the attitude and then looking at what is leisure. And it was transformative for me when I understood Joseph Pieper's definition of leisure. Is basically it's taking you toward worship, and how, especially, you know, the day of rest, the day of leisure is Sunday, and we're called to engage in activity that direct us toward our Lord. And, you know, beginning to see things such as recreational activities, even if it is a sport, it's an element of celebration, like the celebration of the liturgy. You know, reading a book, it challenges us to think and interact. Spending time savoring a cup of tea and chocolate rather than just chomping it down and not really tasting the flavor that comes from it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic idea. The notion that what we do with our time should draw us closer to God, glorify God, make us more holy. If we just asked that question about our days, I mean, start with the leisure time, sure, you've got your, but just ask that question. I think it transforms the way we look at what we want to do with the end of the day. Is watching my Netflix show going to make me more or less like Jesus. I don't know if he uses that term, but that's a practical way to apply it, maybe.
Right. There's this line from the book that I have underlined here, and it says, "In leisure, man too celebrates the end of his work by allowing his inner eye to dwell for a while upon the reality of creation. He looks and he affirms it is good." So it's taking yourself, and it makes me think of living in the mountains. Often what we would do, and I miss living in the mountains because I think we all do, our leisurely time was spent often around fireplace, drinking a cup of cocoa in the winter, playing games. Or it was spent when, you know, weather was decent enough, hiking out through our backyard for hours and hours at a time and sitting on a log looking over the sunset or the sunrise. And there was a beauty, and what happened is it allowed for good conversation or for us to rest there.
Yeah, that in and of itself, I love hiking, right? Like,
right.
There is something about just being out in nature that does draw you closer to God. So Casey, the author of this article, your friend, her and her husband challenged themselves to a week of peeper. And instead of watching the shows, they tried some different activities. And it didn't have to be drastic. It's not like you have to do something, you know, Sunday-ish. I like your examples, right? Like cook a different meal or try a different recipe or go for a hike.
And I think that's the first thing they did.
Yeah, right.
A different meal.
Right. Rather than do something quick, let's try a different recipe. Or they took some dancing lessons was one of the ones they did. I thought that was fantastic. What a great idea. It does take a little bit of effort. I think it seemed daunting at the time.
Right.
And I get that. I mean, a guy with four kids, and by, you know, the time you get them all into bed or whatever, you're like, we're not, we don't want to do anything that's challenging. But at the same time, I know for me, even exercising instead of plopping down.
Yes.
Just exercising, you think, I don't want to do this. But I don't remember ever after exercising not being glad that I did. Right. Like the act in and of itself rejuvenates. And I think these acts are like that yeah, OK, it's going to take a little bit of a step to maybe start them, but you'll be happy that you did.
You'll be happy and grateful that you did it. And even, you know, the element, I think about this a lot. Some of my most treasured family, you know, moments are my parents really made an effort growing up for us all to sit together and eat meals. And, you know, I was probably one of the most disruptive when I was younger because I was dancing and gone a lot in the evenings. But sitting together and eating meals, and this, when I was younger, we didn't have cell phones at the table all the time the way we now do. You know, we didn't have cell phones all the time at the table when I was growing up. And, you know, we'd look each other in the faces and we'd be interacting. We'd have quiet moments. We'd have topics of conversation. It might have talked a lot about abortion, other topics, because that's where my mom worked and that's where, you know, I had, you know, been raised in this pro-life environment, but it challenged us to learn to think and think critically and have conversations and grow and bring up topics and memories. And that's something I miss, sharing and recording these memories of our lifetime that we don't really think about anymore unless Facebook brings up a picture from 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, just the act of being together face to face, interacting, changes the whole dynamic of everything. You know, we started the show saying how people are reacting to the Me Too campaign. And a lot of it is based on online interactions, that when we did it, we want it to be more individual. We want it to be more face to face. When that happens, the conversation, I guarantee, will be better, right? Your conversation will be deeper, and it will ultimately, hopefully, draw you closer to God. So that kind of leisure is something we should definitely all be striving for.
Absolutely. And I really want to put a push. I had a friend who I actually recommended this book to just a couple weeks ago, and she said, I tried to pick it up. It was so hard. I said, try, take it slow. I understand it's deep philosophy, but it's so beneficial.
This has been Trending with Dawn and Timmery on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Trending.
To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.